This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehisu Heap, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
It seems that they were running a fast-track route from Tunisia to the coast of Sicily around the town of Trapani using very fast inflatable dinghies and expert drivers to travel along this route that took only around 4 hours. This is being allegedly used for illegal trafficking of cigarettes and a kind of a shuttle service for illegal immigrants.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna. The full story coming up.
Also, there are reports of tensions in Lesotho as voters await the official results. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to fly home this weekend from London, where he's been on medical leave.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Lesotho officials are expected to release the final results today of Saturday's elections. But the opposition bloc led by the All Basotho Convention, or ABC, has won 50 seats. So it appears there will be another coalition government. The ruling Democratic Congress has won 26 seats. International observers had raised concerns over the deployment of the army at polling centers. But they also said the vote appeared to be generally free and fair. Nevertheless, there are reports of tensions in Lesotho.
Italian police have arrested 15 alleged human traffickers in what they say was a major operation named Scorpion Fish. The arrests were made in Sicily and other parts of Italy. Police say they transported illegal immigrants as well as criminals and jihadists from Tunisia to Sicily. The smuggling operation also included moving cigarettes into Italy. In another major development, the third suspect killed in the recent London terrorist attacks had been stopped by Italian police recently on a visit to Italy. His mother is Italian and his father is Moroccan. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following developments on both stories. She spoke first on the arrest of the smugglers.
It seems that they were running a fast-track route from Tunisia to the coast of Sicily around the town of Trapani using very fast inflatable dinghies and expert drivers to travel along this route that took only around 4 hours. This was being allegedly used for illegal trafficking of cigarettes and a kind of a shuttle service for illegal immigrants. And once they arrived in Italy, they were provided with clothes and other information, logistical support to help them move from Sicily to their desired destination.
So this was truly a major operation and a major bust for Italian police. So what would be the next step?
The police here feel that this particular operation was also being used to move people wanted by the Tunisian authorities for allegedly committing serious crimes. They didn't say what. And also those who may have had connections with jihadist organizations. Now, that seems like a big call to make, but it sounds like they have solid evidence to indicate that. And they also said that one of the people was arrested by Tunisian police and also rejected by Italian police for alleged terrorism. These illegal landings are of concern, particularly when people are paying thousands of euros to travel across the Mediterranean, particularly when there are so many thousands of people still making that dangerous journey in other boats from the coast of Libya.
Also, I understand there's an Italian connection to the London Bridge terrorist attacks. Can you tell us about that?
News broke today that the third terrorist who had not been named by British police is Yusuf Zagba. He was born in Fez in 1995. His father was Moroccan and his mother is Italian. And he was intercepted. He was stopped at Bologna Airport in March 2016, according to Italian reports, while he was seeking to board a flight for Turkey with a one-way ticket, allegedly heading to Syria. Italian police arrested him at the time. They seized a computer and his cell phone. There were suggestions that he had some kind of Islamic content, religious content on his phone, and also suggestions that there may have been jihadist content on his phone. He hired a lawyer, he took action in the courts and was released, and had been living in London, working in London and going backwards and forwards, still seeing his mother, and he was last in Italy last year. Now, the Italian authorities notified the British authorities, particularly MI5, the Secret Service, about him and his movements. And so that's likely to get a lot of scrutiny in the UK now, given how controversial this attack is and whether or not these people were known to authorities who failed to act and step in to prevent this attack.
And tomorrow, Mediterranean police chiefs will be meeting at a unique meeting to discuss things such as terrorism and the migrant crisis. What are the expectations from this meeting?
Well, as we know, the migrant crisis shows no sign of slowing down. Italy has seen thousands of migrants arrive this year, and there are expectations we could see 200,000 arrivals by the end of 2017. The Italian police chief, Franco Gabrielli, will meet his counterparts from France, Spain, Greece, and other countries around the Mediterranean in Lampedusa in Sicily tomorrow to discuss the migration crisis as well as terrorism and organised crime. This is of concern because of the number of migrants moving from sub-Saharan Africa through Libya across the Mediterranean, and particularly when we're seeing such a chaotic, lawless situation inside Libya, there's great concern about whether we're going to see some sort of terrorism or crime arising from this wave of migration in the future.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome. In other migrant news, Reuters reports 26 Nigerians have been flown home from the Libyan city of Misrata. The migrants took part in a voluntary return program sponsored by the Libyan government and the International Organization for Migration. Nearly 2,800 migrants in Libya took part in the program last year. The IOM hopes to return as many as 10,000 migrants in Libya this year.
Reuters reports Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to fly home this weekend from London, where he has been on medical leave. Buhari flew to London on May 7th for what it was described as medical tests. However, no details about his medical condition have been released. He previously had gone to London for medical care in January and remained there for 2 months. Nigeria First Lady Aisha Buhari has issued a statement saying her husband is recuperating fast. She returned to Nigeria today after going to visit him last week.
Refugee host communities in Uganda are feeling the strain of sharing their meager resources with the many thousands of refugees from South Sudan. They are grappling with food shortages and other problems. VOA's Catherine Nambi files this report from Kampala.
Although Uganda's model of refugee management, protection, and social integration has been hailed world over, the ever-increasing refugee population, especially from South Sudan, is placing excessive pressure on host community resources. In some districts like Adjumani and Lamo, where refugees outnumber the host community population, public services are overwhelmed. Jake Ochan, a community development officer in northern Uganda district, Lamo, explains what resources are under the most pressure.
Food security is actually a very big challenge facing the entire community of Lamu. Accommodation will be also a shortage. We shall write an appeal letter. We shall actually distribute it to all the agencies.
Jonathan Rutabingwa, a resident district commissioner in Lamu district, says health facilities and security in the district are overstretched by refugees and Uganda's host communities.
The bulk of these people remain with the host families, which would be okay, but this has also attendant problems, health issues, diseases, because it is a fact that the health facilities in South Sudan are fragile. Whereas on this side we have advanced, like in vaccination and immunization. Some of these people may not only have come with their belongings and their saucepans, some may have been tempted to bring weapons.
United Nations Country Representative Rosa Malango says host communities need to be supported to make them feel comfortable hosting the refugees.
Uganda's hospitality to give space and cohabitate with close to 1.2 million people needs more than official recognition. Today, 800,000 people from South Sudan alone are sharing land and resources in the West Nile. 1.2 million people who have fled insecurity and conflict have found dignity in Uganda. They cohabitate with Ugandans in 12 districts, where we as a UN family continue to focus on reinforcing social services.
David Kazungu, a commissioner for refugees in Uganda's Office of the Prime Minister, says policies are in place to ensure host communities partake of all the available refugee funding projects.
How the host communities benefit is through putting up schools, infrastructure development, water harvesting, water tapping from, say, big water sources, motorization of water, livelihoods improvement, value addition, agriculture, post-harvest handling, issues that will help improve on the productivity of those areas.
Meanwhile, Uganda's Prime Minister, Dr. Ruhakana Rugunda, has challenged host communities to look beyond the refugee population and instead focus on how best to utilize them for the development.
Proper management of refugees is a critical investment in human capital, and we should look at it in that positive way. I know that when we are supporting refugees, we are literally not just supporting refugees, we are supporting ourselves, we are supporting humanity, we are supporting the world. Let's not be scared about population explosion. These are people who are here, the overwhelming majority of them, as soon as the situation settles down in their respective countries, they will be running back.
Uganda is experiencing the fastest growing refugee crisis in the world, with a current refugee population of 1.2 million from 13 countries. 2,000 refugees arrive every day from South Sudan, escaping the war and hunger in their country. Officials do not expect the exodus from South Sudan to ease anytime soon. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA Africa in Kampala.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. There are reports of tensions in Lesotho as voters await the official results. Italian police have arrested 15 alleged human traffickers in what they say was a major operation. And Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is expected to fly home this weekend from London, where he has been on medical leave. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Every year, 26 million metric tons of fish are stolen through illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. As a result, populations of tuna, one of the most sought-after fish, have plummeted. But now a new global declaration has been approved to help stop illegal tuna fishing. It was approved at the UN's first ocean conference in New York this week. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Tuna 2020 Traceability Declaration pledges to stop illegal tuna from coming to market and to end the forced labor that drives the illicit industry. Dominic Warre is the head of public-private partnership at the World Economic Forum, which brokered the tuna declaration.
Why is that important? You know, is this really a big deal? Well, it's a $24 billion big deal for many small island states in the Indian Ocean and the Pacific who, in their 200 nautical mile circumference around their islands rely on tuna for a great deal of their GDP, some islands up to 70-80%. So if someone is stealing from your farm every evening, and when you wake up, your corn is gone or your potatoes are gone, your livelihood suffers. That's what's happening to these small island states.
The declaration calls for tracing tuna from the time it's caught to where it's sold,
to make sure we can identify who is fishing what and where, and have that relate all the way back through the supply chain, such that large retailers commit to full traceability of their tuna in their stores, producers, people who make the canned tuna, and those who go out in boats, together with the governments who are being robbed, and the international organizations who support the targets which the Sustainable Development Goals set up to try and do something about it. So all of those come together in this declaration.
SDG number 14 calls for ending illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Day one of the declaration saw 50 major fishing companies, retailers, and associated businesses sign on. That number is expected to grow in the coming months. Ware says once people, business, and governments state their commitment, the declaration moves on to enforcement.
How do you make it happen is rather exciting, because today we have unlimited capacity compared to 10 years ago, for example, in terms of the technological developments, in terms of data processing, in terms of satellites, and all sorts of information which can help a small island state or another kind of fishing nation look after its fish stock.
Tuna are not just a vital part of many fishing nation economies. They are what's known as keystone species. A tuna is a big fish that can take up to 8 years to reach full size, and it helps keep the oceans healthy.
It provides a very important role in the ocean ecosystem. There's lots of other fish that it eats and therefore stops kind of pests and other problems occurring. And during its whole lifetime, it provides a lot of nutrients through its waste for the plant life and such in the ecosystem that it's in. And if we plunder a major species like tuna, you kind of knock the ecosystem out of balance and all sorts of things start to go wrong.
Populations of bluefin tuna have fallen by more than 90%, due in large part to illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Experts say it will take decades to recover. Many of the crew members aboard vessels involved in illegal fishing have been forced into labor or take the job because they are extremely poor. They can spend many months at sea and be paid very little for their work. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe spoke yesterday at the UN Ocean Conference in New York. During his speech, he called for an end to international sanctions against his country. Mugabe said Zimbabwe is committed to implementing the Sustainable Development Goals, but he added that the effects of climate change are not discriminatory, so please down with your sanctions. Sanctions were imposed in 2001 over allegations of human rights violations and voting irregularities.
The Chinese government has lodged a complaint with the Zambian government after 31 Chinese nationals were detained for allegedly conducting illegal mining operations in the Copper Belt. China says it supports cracking down on illegal mining, but says Zambia had not provided sufficient evidence against those detained. The Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs has expressed what it calls serious concern and resolute opposition to the detentions.
A human rights expert is urgently appealing for an end to violence and discrimination against people based on their sexual orientation and gender identity. The expert has presented the first ever report to the UN Human Rights Council, spelling out the magnitude of abuse and suffering experienced by LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people worldwide. Lisa Schlein reports from the opening of the Council's three-week session in Geneva.
Controversy has followed Vitit Muntarbor since his appointment as the first ever independent expert on the rights of LGBT people. The Thai international law professor has come in for personal abuse and received threats from those who are opposed to the protection of gays and transgender people. His first report to the UN Human Rights Council will not endear him to governments and others who shun people with a different sexual orientation. Muntar Born reports some 70 countries criminalize same-sex relations, particularly between men. And he says about 40 countries criminalize same-sex relations between women who have sex with women. Globally, he says, people perceived as having a different sexual orientation and/or gender identity from what is considered the norm are subject to horrific forms of violence, abuse, and discrimination.
Violations are pervasive in numerous settings. Killings, rapes, mutilation, torture, cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, lashings, abductions, arbitrary detention, harassment, physical and mental assaults, bullying from a young age, pressures leading to suicide.
Independent expert Muntar Born says discriminatory measures against LGBT are widespread and aggravated by incitement to hatred in many settings. He is calling for mutual respect, tolerance, and understanding of people with a different sexual orientation, buttressed by national laws. The independent expert says biases and prejudices tend to emerge from a young age. He says the lack of education and awareness, which may feed the phobias and bigotry against LGBT, should be addressed early on so young people can learn respect for diversity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Solomon Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Join us this Tuesday as we take a look at menstrual health and adolescent girls. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we look at reflections of what most voices on the continent say is the Africa that we need, meaning good governance, rule of law, and social and economic justice for all. That's next week right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.